I'm starting to believe that balance, imbalance, describes condition that arrives in our lives millions and millions of times. Literally, millions and millions of times. Everything we think is good and holy relies on balance and imbalance being effectively dealt with. There are lots of definitions of those two words, balance and imbalance, and I'm a fan of the website thefreedictionary.com. And what I want to do, though, is consider those words from an energetic standpoint. And it seems to me that balance means that there is an energetic equilibrium between the points, or between ideas, or between conditions, or between people, or between the cells of the body, etc. Inasmuch as there is a balanced condition, the natural tendency to seek balance is not really very active, since what we normally seek has already been achieved. It already exists. Imbalance, on the other hand, indicates an energetic difference between points, or between ideas, or between conditions, between people, between the energy of the cells in the body. And in that case, it's natural to seek balance between the current condition and another perceived condition. It is this state of having an imbalanced condition that drives change millions of times a day. You can imagine if the conscious mind is processing information at the rate of about 4,000 bits of information per second, and the subconscious is said to be processing information at the rate of 4 billion bits of information per second, you can imagine the potential for going into balance and going out of balance, going back into balance, going out of balance, and so on, is extremely high. The cells in our body are not the only things that naturally seek balance. And the way they do it is by adding what is perceived to be lacking, say water or oxygen or some form of nutrition, and excreting what they perceive they have too much of, metabolic waste, heavy metals, and other things that are harmful to the health of the cell. If you think of it, even simple activities like walking requires our acceptance of the process of balancing and imbalancing with every step that we take. Now, a child learning how to walk has to develop the ability to regain balance after becoming imbalanced. You know, we as adults can stand on one foot temporarily, and that amount of temporariness is really a function of our balance. If we could do it for, you know, many seconds or even a minute or so, that would be a wonderful thing. But a child has to learn how to do that. Pick up one foot and be balanced on one foot only, while the other one is in the air, moving toward the front or the back if they're walking backwards. So you think, yeah. So we could talk about this idea of being balanced and imbalanced if we're talking about walking or running or riding a bike. Now we could say, oh, let's talk about this in terms of physics. We would say to maybe a child about to walk, daughter or son, before you start walking or before you start riding the bike, I'd like to explain the physics of center of gravity to you. So what you're looking to do is maintain your center of gravity. If you can manage that, you're going to be a great walker, a great runner, great rider of a bike. We're not going to have one of those conversations with a young child. But it still holds true that center of gravity is an important concept. Today is Sunday, and across America, and maybe across the world, people are watching on television a variety of sporting events, from golf to basketball to football to you name it. And when you look at these ideas that of center of gravity and balance, imbalance, you can notice that the athletes who are better managers of their physical center of gravity tend to excel at their sports, and maybe even that can explain why they win the games that they play in. And if you watch these people and what they do with their bodies, it is mighty impressive. Like, wow, I didn't know you could do that with a body. I didn't know if you could turn in midair. I don't know you could jump behind and catch a ball one-handed and flip. And because these people have physical intelligence, which is another way of saying they are excellent managers of their physical center of gravity. Sports is another place that you can see a common tactic. A common tactic when you're playing an opponent in a sporting event is to try to knock that guy or gal out of balance, to be able to dislocate them from their center of gravity. So from on an emotional level, if we're talking about an emotional center of gravity, you can see the things that people are trying to do. They're trying to intimidate the other person. They're trash-talking. They're taunting. They're making comments about one's heritage and you name it. All designed to make a person become emotionally imbalanced. It's like, yeah. And if you can get that person, who is your opponent in a sporting event, to be imbalanced, you have an advantage. And that's the purpose of all of that activity, is to be able to reduce their effectiveness so they're not able to perform as well because they're out of balance, and consequently, you have an advantage over them. Frankly, I think this idea that balance imbalance is so fundamental that it's actually implicated in stress. It's implicated in human suffering, illness, and death. And the good news is this idea that balance and imbalance are fundamental to all achievement. Because I deal in the area of healing and trying to understand what interferes with healing and what facilitates healing, I know a bit about stress. And stress is recognized not just by me, but by most people as being the main factor in anywhere from 80 to 95%, maybe even higher, of all illnesses. Stress is involved in almost all illnesses. And the definition that I frequently refer to is the one developed by Dr. Hans Selye, who was considered to be the father of this stress research years ago. And he said, stress is the nonspecific response to a demand placed upon the body. I'm going to take that definition and rework it in the context of what I'm talking about, balance, imbalance. A demand is the energy pattern that causes imbalance. Look at any form of demand, whether it is your desire, you want something, you have a need, you have a should, you know, I should do this. Other people have expectations that they levy on you and you can feel that, or you have an intention, or you have a duty, you have responsibilities, and that list can go on and on. It is those energy patterns that, other than what we're currently experiencing, cause us to feel imbalanced. It is a condition we're not currently experiencing. Consequently, there is some sort of impulse to experience this other condition, and that makes us out of balance. Now, instead of being a single point, I'm balanced, I'm feeling really good. There's, here I am, but I want to be over there. I have this, I want to have that. And so on. The part of that definition about non-specific response means that the thoughts, feelings, words, and actions that would, I'll say, effectively handle that demand don't seem to be available to our awareness at that moment. So it's like, I got this demand, it's something I should do, but what's going on? I don't know what to think or feel. I don't know what to say or do. I don't know how to bring about a satisfactory balance. That action is not available to my awareness. That's stressful. For my purposes today, I'm talking about the demands that imbalance us as being energetic in nature. Now, it's obvious to anybody and everybody, I'm sure, that chemical poisons, pollution, and other physical matter, you know, if I throw a rock and it hits you and it knocks you down, you'd go, oh, that was not really energetic. That was matter that impacted me. Yep. And all of those chemicals, those toxins and other things can imbalance the body's tissues and organs. We understand that. But my point is that we're better at regaining spiritual, mental, emotional balance. And as we do that, we're going to experience less physical imbalance, less, I'll say, toxic imbalance, less poisons will be ingested either through our five senses or just because we're no longer putting ourselves in those environments. We're going to be, I'll say, less attractive to those lower forms of energy, and we won't need them. People who have hard days at work, oh, I had a hard day today. How are you going to get back into balance? Now, nobody is asking that question, but what they do frequently, I'm going to stop on the way home and have a couple of beers. Will that bring you back into balance? That's what your imbalance was, a beer deficiency? And if anybody were asked that question, they would be in a position where they're like, oops, this doesn't really make much sense, right? I actually do have to, no. Imbalance is not a beer deficiency. But people are not that aware of this idea of balance and imbalance, even though it's so significant in our lives. And if we ask that question of a person who thinks what he needs in order to get back into balance is a couple of beers on the way home, it's like, let's talk about this. Maybe there's a different way to become more aware of what it is you actually need other than a couple of beers with your buddies at the bar. It makes sense to me that consciousness determines balance and imbalance. Your consciousness does, my consciousness does, everybody and everything's consciousness does. It is this imbalance in the consciousness of a seed of corn that makes it grow to its fuller or fullest potential. It has this consciousness that causes it to, I got to grow into a big old corn stalk. I got to have ears of corn hanging off me. I think the same thing is true of an acorn that could grow into a huge tree if it were planted in the right soil and the environment was suitable. Human beings, through the use of, what do we use? We use our minds, we use our feelings, we use our words, we use our actions. We can grow to the highest potential or not, depending on what has been added to our consciousness. Our consciousness now is the soil in which we grow. I think it's this concept. What has been added and not added to a person's consciousness that explains the tremendous variation in human behavior? When you see what humans are capable of, the unbelievably fantastic charitable acts, generosity, works of art, and the lower forms of human behavior, of cruelty, etc. It's like, wow, what a range, what explains that? I think you can imagine that the differences in consciousness of, say, a person raised in a crime family We care about our own few and everybody else we don't really care about. This is about getting what we want for the few of us. But if you were raised in a family of saints, you would go, they see things differently. So the identities of those two theoretical people, one raised in a criminal family and one raised in a family of saints, you can imagine, their individuality, their identities are going to be shaped by the inputs that they would have received that would have talked about who you respect and honor, who you care about, in the case of a saint, this would be inappropriate, who you don't care about. The saint would go, no. We care about everyone and everything. We care about the earth. We care about every living being on the earth. Go, oh, yeah, yeah. And then if you watch these two theoretical people behave, you would go, wow, they are definitely demonstrating their consciousness. They are definitely demonstrating what they have been taught is the right way to think, feel, speak, and act. Let me shift gears a teeny bit. You've heard this expression, but do you know why? Don't discuss politics or religion at a cocktail party. Do you know why? Well, here's my theory, that religious beliefs, regardless of how foolish they may appear to somebody else, and political beliefs, no matter how foolish they may appear to somebody else, are so strongly connected to our identities that we must defend them. They are us. So if we are in a situation where we belittle or feel the need to attack somebody else's political or religious beliefs, we're turning into a saber-toothed tiger. That person has to defend it. And likewise, if we're standing there and somebody else attacks our religious or personal political beliefs, we're going to take that personally. These things are so strongly held and so important to our identities, and that, to me, is what explains why people can kill other people for their different religious beliefs, their different political beliefs. Really sane, decent people on those two subjects, all bets are off. And if we're balancing our identity on those two structures, my political beliefs, my religious beliefs, anything that is threatening them is threatening my identity. The ego is like, oh, no. We're not going to allow that to happen. We must defend ourselves from that criticism, that emotional or that physical attack. We're going to do some kind of thing. And if I compare our identities to, say, a physical structure, maybe like a house, I would say that religious beliefs and political beliefs are load-bearing structures. Marianne likes to watch HGTV, a lot of remodeling, very clever. It's amazing the vision these people have to be able to turn what looks like really ordinary structures into beautiful homes. But when they come across, please move that wall. That's a load-bearing structure. We can't really move that. Or if we do, we have to make all kinds of other efforts to compensate for it. So I think these beliefs, religious beliefs and political beliefs, are those load-bearing structures. And they can't be removed and they can't be changed. Otherwise, the identity, the building, would crumble. And again, the idea that the ego is going, no, it's going to do everything in its power to prevent damage to the individuality. Because that's what it's seen as an essential action to protect its survival. It will defend it to extremes. when I talk about needs, and we can consider that to be fundamental to this area of balance, imbalance, I use a convenient set of needs that I refer to as Sfuli plus two, S-F-U-L-I plus two, survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, and the need to look good, get approval, those seven. When we perceive that those needs are not being met, that's when we feel imbalanced. And if we put our attention on something and we feel, uh-oh, I'm not enough, and I write not enough, capital N, capital E, because I think not enoughness is a condition of chronic imbalance. Oh, I'm not tall enough, handsome enough, smart enough, pretty enough, rich enough, educated enough, good enough, kind enough, thin enough, big enough, strong enough, on and on and on. At the end of a day, 2 days of coaching years ago, I realized when those conversations were done, wow, I think those nine people all said the same thing. They all said the same thing. They all said they were not enough. The only variation was the word they put in between those two words. And I just went through some of them. You know, pretty enough, strong enough, kind enough, good enough, educated enough, rich enough. It's like, ooh, wow. It is this perception that we're not enough that can send us into imbalance. We've all heard the expression, the straw that broke the camel's back. We need to distinguish between camels and human beings. The camels don't really have much choice about the size or the weight of the burdens that are placed on them. But humans, even though we can become overburdened by family, expectations, religion, rules, authorities, corporation, peers, and ourselves, we can do something about it. And that's the main difference, is we can become mindful of the burdens, those demands, those, I got to do this, I got to go north and south at the same time, I got to sit down and stand up at the same time, I have to be perfect. We can become mindful of those burdens and we can remove them. We can be like, whoa, wait, where did I get this? Where did I get this rule? Be perfect. Don't make a mistake. Don't embarrass us. Those kind of things that parents put on children. It's like, I think I'm going to set that down. I'm going to let that be recycled. That doesn't fit my current needs. And then we can move on. Camels are not in a position to do that. We're in a position to do that. This idea of a balanced load, that pertains to humans, camels, donkeys, mules, trucks, boats, all sorts of vehicles. And it's an important concept. All of these carriers, humans and others, can be harmed by trying to carry loads that are too heavy for us, too many, or are out of balance. You can sometimes see that people carrying packages, and they're making every kind of attempt to try to move that load back and forth, one hand to the other, trying to keep balanced. You can see pictures in, say, National Geographic, in which they are have people with sticks across their shoulders, and they have water buckets on either side that are balanced. It's easier to balance that way than just carry a single bucket of water. We're constantly seeking ways to get back into balance. Because using that definition of stress that I mentioned before, I think demands are the main variable. Demands are the main variable. So if we have too many demands, or demands that are conflicting, our ability to respond specifically and effectively and get good feelings from it, pretty limited, pretty far weakened. When that ability is diminished, we start to become even more balanced. We become discouraged, you know, tired, upset, and so on. You know, it's real clear to me that for women, the normal demands placed on a woman in our culture really requires a woman to be superwoman with a sex drive. I made a list. You know, what is required of a woman? What does she have to be and do? This is all. This is all. She's got to be an excellent daughter and perhaps a sister. She's got to be a breadwinner and in a job or in her own business. She's got to be a good lover, a great cook. I think it pays. She's got to be a good shopper for groceries and other things. You know, acquiring stuff to make life more comfortable and convenient is a necessity. She's got to be a superb housekeeper. She's got to be physically very attractive to her partner, but not too physically attractive to other people, because that could be threatening to a partner. Got to be a high achiever. Got to be socially involved. If she has children, she's got to be a perfect mother, that's all. She's got to have a sex drive that makes her always available to her partner. But she doesn't want to be too demanding of her partner. She's got to be a person who devotes sufficient time to all those activities, all the other demands that are placed upon her that I haven't listed. Got to be a great listener to a partner, friends, children, co-workers, employees, whomever needs somebody's ears to speak into. And like all other human beings, she needs the time and the energy enough to get her own needs met. I forgot to mention, she's got to have time to travel to all of those places and time to sleep. Those burdens, those demands are enormous. When we're over-demanded, it can result in a condition that I describe as demanded to death. Women aren't the only one that happened to. That happens to men, women, and, of course, camels. Demands, absolutely necessary for our growth and for our achievement, for good feelings of effectiveness, but they can also lead to imbalance if they are perceived in certain ways. So if you have an imbalance, you want to do something that you haven't done right now. You want to write that great American novel. You want to climb a mountain in your home state. That can be good, can be growthful, exciting, challenging, fun, and other things. You go, yeah, oh, thank goodness for imbalances. Yep. In that case, thank goodness for imbalances, because they help us draw in divine energy so we can meet those challenges successfully. But imbalances can be threatening, scary, overwhelming, off-putting, and we're like, no, nope. And we back away from them. We try to avoid them, or we fight them. That makes our perceptions key to the whole process of going from balance to imbalance and back again. Our interpretation of environmental signals, you know, things that we perceive through our 5, 6, or 7 senses, our energy exchange experiences, and I would say this seems to me to be the real keystone to this, our perception of our ability to respond specifically and effectively. I'll repeat that again because I think that's really the key. Our perception of our ability to respond specifically and effectively are what determines our success, happiness, health, fun, love, you name it. So, how do we get back into balance when we feel imbalanced? Since this process, balance, imbalance, is so fundamental in life, we need to understand whether we initiated the imbalance by, oh, I got this goal, I want to do this, I want to achieve this, or whether it was initiated outside of us, you must do this, you must follow this, I expect you to do this. If we decide to go for a walk, we would have started the balance-imbalance process. In this case, what's the recommendation? Keep moving. Keep moving. That's a good suggestion. How about if we were riding a bike? What would we say to a little child? What would we say to somebody else? Keep pedaling. And that would be a good suggestion. Another way to get back into balance is letting go, lightening up. And that's huge. Seeing the humor in it. If you have that ability, you have a magical ability to change things. Talk about being an alchemist like Merlin. I saw the humor in that. Boom. That whole load, that whole demand would have been shifted just by that humorous insight that you just got. So if we're holding on to heavy objects, you know, we pick up something that's physically too heavy for us, whoa, I'm going to fall over. Or we're holding on to a heavy emotion, like resentment or bitterness or anger or fear. Letting go of it can allow us to return to that balanced state. Sometimes, to get back into balance, we would use objects outside of ourselves to facilitate the process of getting back into balance. And I'm not suggesting, you know, the couple of beers on the way home from work. But, you know, if you were going to walk on a tightrope high above the earth, you're going to want to have a balancing pole in your hands. Philippe Petit, he's the guy who walked across the wire that was connected between the two towers of the World Trade Center. You know what he used? A custom-made balancing pole that was 26 feet long and weighed 55 pounds. And he walked across this thing back and forth, back and forth. He stood on it, he danced on it, he laid down on it. He did all kinds of things out there for 45 minutes, balanced one quarter of a mile above the earth. You go, oh, wow. That's cool. His story is a documentary, too. It's absolutely fascinating. Ultimately, our success with balance and imbalance hinge on the same thing that our success, health, happiness hinge on. Our awareness of and our ability to stay connected to our center of gravity on all four levels. If we can know our spiritual center of gravity, our mental center of gravity, our emotional center of gravity, and our physical center of gravity, we're going to be much less likely to be knocked out of balance by common energy exchanges with things we perceive through our five senses, people we deal with, duties that we are engaged in. Philippe Petit knew that. Losing his balance while standing on that wire cable, 1,350 feet up, if he loses his balance, he's going to die. He is going to be killed. I think we're really in a similar position. When we lose our balance and we can't regain it quickly, we lose a little of our lives. We don't lose our lives completely like Philippe would have done. We lose a little of our life. We hold on to those little painful experiences, those painful failures, our shoulda, coulda, woulda, and then we hesitate to fully engage with the next opportunity that presents itself to us. We hold ourselves back. We don't commit to doing it. But we can recover our balance. We can find our centers of gravity. We can study what our centers of gravity are, right? What's your spiritual center of gravity? Like, it pays for us to know that. Ditto with mental, ditto with emotional, and the same with the physical center of gravity. If we can learn what they are, then when the time comes, we can hold on to them and be safe. We can regain, even though we're buffeted by all kinds of energy patterns that are common in daily life, we're going to be able to rebound, go back into balance, and we'll be safe. And we can grow our health, our happiness, our fun, and our success. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of a prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns, reveals startling truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. Didn't it sound like I just mentioned our spiritual center of gravity, or at least the center of gravity that's available to us? We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us, more balance. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know that you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. More talk about getting back into balance. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.